Thank you, Ed.
You're welcome.
It's all set?
Cool.
Okay. Oh. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Davis Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I already actually did this meeting. Well, y'all weren't there. I was driving my car this morning. It went in what turned out to be actually a wasted trip, although maybe it wasn't wasted after all. Maybe God had some other ideas. And as I was in my car, as I do early in the morning, I was thinking about y'all, and I was thinking about this group and what I might say. So I basically had the meeting right there. And I'd like to report to you that it was probably one of the best second step meetings I've ever done in my life. I remember being amazed. It was very spiritual. I was incredibly uplifted. There were things going on around me that seemed to just play into the meeting, you know, and just it was sort of like things set by God, and I put it all together, and it sort of seamlessly it flowed, and I could really see God's hand at work with the messages I was saying to myself at the time. Unfortunately, I forgot about it all. I'm like totally blank now. I don't remember that meeting, but I want to tell you something. You guys would have really enjoyed it. You would have really gotten a lot out of it. It was a doctor. If I repeat myself, it ain't that big a deal, you know, because first of all, I'm 58 or 9, something like that. I'm not sure. You get to a certain point where it really don't matter anyway. And breathing is good enough. And forget stuff. So, but even if I repeat myself, the truth of the matter is, I haven't heard too many new things in here. Everything I get by repetition, so there's nothing wrong with that. But so I will tend to repeat myself and repeat certain phrases, and we hear in AA. One of the things I like to talk about is this doctor, who this true story. I like to talk about true stories. True stories of things that happened to me, you know, just actual things. So there was this doctor who was arrested, and I think I might have talked about this last week, if not, here it goes. And he was practicing medicine up in Palm Beach, and he was giving out drugs for chemotherapy. I don't know what you call drugs. What do you call drugs for chemotherapy? Chemo drugs? Well, what was going on is I don't exactly know how they found him or how this happened, but I remember listening to it on the radio. It was probably long, because I remember talking about this over a year ago, so it was really maybe a year and a half or 2 years ago. Apparently what he had done is he had watered down these drugs. Apparently these drugs are very expensive. And he had watered down the drugs, and as a result of watering down the drugs, a lot of people were dying, because apparently the cancer that this regimen was supposed to handle was the kind of cancer where you had a high cure rate, but people were like dropping dead. And so they ultimately found out that what he was doing, he was diluting the drugs. And the reason he was diluting the drug was, I mean, there was a motive behind it, right? He was diluting the drugs because he was trying to make more money. And apparently, with drugs having to do for curing cancer or chemotherapy, unless you take the exact amount of drugs you're supposed to take over the exact period of time you're supposed to take it, it doesn't work. So it doesn't matter. If you take it like for 1 month short, it doesn't work. Or if you take it at a little bit of a lower dose, it don't work. You got to take the exact right dose for the exact period of time, and then, you know, the odds are, whatever it is, whatever the statistics show, you have your odds of working. And obviously it wasn't happening, because for money he was watering this stuff down, and he was arrested, and I really don't know what happened to him. I should have maybe checked into that one of these days, but it's not important for my purpose. So what happens is, you know, here was a cure, here was something that would help people, and because he diluted the drugs, you know, people were dying. And You know, I think, and all this is just my opinion, you know. I mean, there's no sense anybody getting upset about this. This is just my opinion. I could be wrong. As a matter of, I probably am. And I'll probably drive down south and say, gee, why did I tell them that? I'm all wrong, you know? So you don't have to get upset with me about anything I say, because just understand, everything I say is my opinion. Now, of course, I think I'm absolutely right. I think it's scriptural. I can talk about it in the book. But, you know, but you don't have to worry about some, because trust me, there's a lot of people that will tell you just the opposite of what I'm saying. As a matter of fact, most people will. So it won't hurt you, you know, because there'll be another meeting tomorrow and they'll say, don't believe that crap, you know? And so you'll be, it ain't going to hurt you. It's just another opinion, you know? And, you know, that's the great thing about AA. That's the great thing about AA. You know, there's nobody that's going to tell you, you got to do this and you got to, you know, you sort of, it's your life, it's your choice, it's your deal, right? So, and that's really a good way to be, because then you don't have to go to Al-Anon and be codependent, you know, and worry about whether the guy sitting next, you know, you don't have to sit there and say, why isn't my husband here? Why isn't my wife here? Do you hear what he's saying? You know, you don't have to worry about that. You can just decide for yourself how you want to live your life. And, which is probably a good thing. So in any event, I think, you know, it's my opinion that that happens in AA. You know, I think of the book as like what's written in the book is pure AA, and then this pure AA, this pure stuff, I think they mentioned God 600 times in the first 100, God, not higher power, God. Forget about the he's and the hims and, you know, 600 times in the first 164 pages. You try to get away with mentioning them in the fellowship, they'll tell you you're not supposed to talk about that stuff, you know? That's why when I walked out of the car room one day, I told you about that guy who came up to me. He's a newcomer. He said, oh, you're Russell. I hear you're real good. I should listen to you. You have a lot of good things to say. But they say, he didn't know. He's new, had like a week or two. He says, but they say you talk too much about God. In a book where it says, see to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. In a book where they say that there is one who has all power, that one is God, may you find him now. In the book where they say that the three things you have to be absolutely perfectly convinced on in order to even move forward is that you're an alcoholic and you can't run your own life, that no human power is ever going to help you, that only God could and would if he was sought, you know? In a book that says, job or no job, wife or no wife, you know, you can recover, everything will be okay as long as you have a relationship with God. In a book that says all that, some newcomer walks out of an AA meeting and says, but I hear you talk too much about that stuff. It's like, I hear you're handing out them chemotherapy drugs, and they're not diluted. You know, but you know, where did he get that from? You know where he got that from? He got that from some guy, because he don't know. He didn't read the book or anything like that. You know where he got that from? He got that from a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Some guy in Alcoholics Anonymous told him, forget about the God stuff. Maybe for good reason, maybe for not good. Who knows what he heard, you know what I mean? He got those vibes, forget about the God stuff, because somebody in AA or a fellowship in AA who watered it down told him that stuff because it made them feel uncomfortable. Because it made them feel uncomfortable. Not because they were worried about him, because it made them feel uncomfortable. Because if they had to talk to him about that stuff, then they might have to deal with it. But the problem with the watered-down approach is that there's no problem with it. You know, there's no have-tos in here. There's a book. There's a chapter in the book Alcoholics Anonymous that says, chapter to the agnostics. Agnostic is a guy who says, I don't know. Atheism, they totally put down. Does that mean an atheist can't be a member of AA? No, that's the great thing about AA. Anybody can come in, you know. Cows, whatever, it doesn't matter, you know? As a matter of fact, did you know you don't even have to be an alcoholic to be a member of AA? It's true. All you have to have is a desire to stop drinking. That's what it says in the traditions. The only requirement is a desire to stop drinking. That's the only requirement to be a member. That's not necessarily what you need in order to be happy, healthy, and sane. That's not necessarily what you need to belong to the fellowship. There's another fellowship in here. You know, we got a fellowship of thumb-sucking crybabies. We also have something called the Fellowship of the Spirit. They talk in AA. If you get into chapter 6, they say this is what separates the men from the boys. There's a great separation that goes on here. You don't have to be deaf, dumb, and blind to be down here, around here for a while to realize that they're sober and they're sober. There's people that you look up to, or there's people that you say, gee, I want what they have. And there's other people saying, I don't know what's wrong with him, but, you know, they're moving to the other side of the room because they don't want to catch it. You know? I mean, every crazy son of a bitch you ever saw in a bar that you thought was nuts is in here. They're here. So, you know, so here's this deal. And but in here, we don't water it down for money. We have other things that we get from watering the message down. First of all, the first thing we get from watering it down is we don't have to work it that hard. We don't have to grow. Because if you don't believe, we're talking, we have one chapter in the book, it's called Chapter to the Agnostics. I mean, we at every meeting they say, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. So everybody knows in order not to fail, if there is a shot of not failing, you got to thoroughly follow our path. And they say, here's the stuff we did. Now, the book was, we already covered this, the book was written in 1939, AA started in 1935, so the one thing we know they didn't do is they never read the book. You know, when they say, you follow our path, you do what we did, you know what I mean? And then you can't fail, but we know they didn't read the book, because the book was written 4 years after the program happened, and we know what they were reading, they were reading the Holy Bible. But you can't talk about it in AA, you know, unless it's like one of my meetings, you know? So you know, because I figured out a long time ago, no matter what I say here, they can't kick me out. And after you can get, you know, and I've got 27 years, so after you get past the "but will they like me" shit, which essentially runs your life, living your life so that worrying about whether other people will like you or how you, after you get past the "will they like me" shit, then you can basically say whatever the hell you want to say. You're free. You know, that new freedom and that new happiness, which is different than the old stuff where you're always constantly worrying about what did I say and what did I say and what do they think and all that deal. So they have this thing called Chapter to the Agnostics. And Chapter to the Agnostics, it's the only chapter, you know, we know what they think about the atheists. I know because they got a thing, because Dr. Bob's Nightmare, who was the co-founder of AA, this is what he said. He said, if you think, the first, last paragraph, this is what he leaves us with. If you think you are an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any other form of intellectual problem, if you think you are an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any other form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what is in this book, what's in this book? 600 times they mention God. God could and would if he was, that keeps you from accepting what is in this book, I feel sorry for you. So if you think I'm rough, you just be thankful you're not hanging around with Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob. You know, you people say, oh, if I was only sponsored by Willis, if I was only sponsored by Dr. Bob, you wouldn't want that. I don't think they'd be as nice as me. I mean, they wrote it down. They say, I feel sorry for you. Your heavenly Father will never let you down. You know, your heavenly Father, he says, you'll surely, if you accept what we have in this place, you'll surely meet some of us as you trudge this road to happy destiny. And the only part of the book they wrote in Chapter to the Agnostics, everything else is Chapter to the Believers, Chapter to the Agnostics. And in Chapter to the Agnostics, the only thing they said about, they tried to be nice, they tried to be logical, they tried to persuade. But when the bottom line comes in Chapter to the Agnostics, what they ended up ultimately saying was this. And this is what it all boils down to. Besides, and this is about us. This is all about us. You know, they knew writing this book, they knew right off writing this book, Reach Out to the Agnostic, that not only we didn't want to hear about God, that there would be a hatred, an antipathy about God, that people would be pissed off if we talked about God. So, and you ever ask yourself, why didn't they just use higher power throughout the whole book? Why did they go from, on the second step, came to leave, and to the third step, made a decision, turn your will and your life over to God? Why didn't they even use the word God? They could have warded it down. Everybody would have been happy. Warded it down for the lowest common denominator. Well, you know why? This is why I think because they wanted to tell the truth. Because they were less interested in themselves and more interested in saving lives. They weren't ashamed. You know, there's a line in the Bible, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. That's the line. I'm not ashamed. They weren't ashamed that God did the deal for them. And so they weren't going to work. They were, you know what Bill Wilson said? Remember last week when he said to Henrietta, he said, the Lord, listen to me. He said, the Lord has done so much for me, curing me of this terrible disease that I got to keep on telling people and tell them. He was on a mission. Nobody does the stuff he does unless he was on a mission. He said you had to be the Good Samaritan every day. He said your life will include great interruptions of your schedule. Is that what your life includes? Great interruptions of your schedule? Man, if you're not being interrupted, you're not doing what he was doing. Or is your life about, I can't go to a meeting tonight because the football game is gone? Is your life about fitting AA into your life, fitting this mission into your life? Or is this your life like Bill Wilson was about, every night out there, carrying this message because he was so grateful? You know, if you want what they got, you got to do what they did. Here's what it says in chapter 2 of the Gnostics. Besides a seeming inability to accept much on faith, this is about a life of faith, and it ain't about a life of faith in ourselves, because we did that deal. Besides a seeming inability to accept much on faith, we often found ourselves handicapped by obstinacy, sensitiveness, and unreasoning prejudice. Many of us have been so touchy that even casual reference to spiritual things made us bristle with antagonism. So if you're pissed off about anything I say tonight, you're the guy they were talking about. I'm talking to you. I'm talking, the one who hates me for bringing this up and thinks it's bullshit, I'm talking to you. As a matter of fact, I'm not even talking to you because I'm reading from a book. They're talking to you. This is what they say right after that. This sort of thinking had to be abandoned, which is, in short, it says, get over it. So if you try this thing and you refuse stubbornly to get over it, and it don't work for you, for God's sakes, don't tell people that you did AA and it didn't work. Just tell them the truth. That's all you have to do. Tell them the truth. That I did AA, but I didn't want to do it. I just didn't want to do it. Just tell them the truth. That way you'll know the truth and everybody else will know the truth. Because when you do it, it works fine. So the reason we do it is because we have this incredible, not only, you know, it says, an alcoholic who does not accept his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious. Of true happiness, he'll know none at all. My alcohol, the drinking was but a symptom of my alcoholism. That's what the book says. Symptomatic of alcoholism is that alcoholics tend to drink a lot. But they do a lot of other things too. You know, alcoholism isn't about drinking. I mean, there's not a person in this room, including me, that's less alcoholic than the day he walked in than he is right now. You don't come in here and you stop drinking all of a sudden, oh, I'm not alcoholic anymore. Alcoholism is what's going on inside of you right now. It says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, and discontented, which is a good enough description of us, plus 1,000 other things. They are restless, irritable, and discontent, unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. It's not what alcoholism does to you, it's what it does for you. It does something for you. What it does for you is it takes you from where you usually are, being sober, to some place where it's comfortable, where you can live. You know, the problem with alcohol, the real problem with alcoholism, with being an alcoholic, is when you're sober. Drunk is not a problem. Sober is the problem. You know how they talk about us sober? They say we have 1,000 forms of fears and insecurities and self-delusions, stepping on the toes of others, retaliating, all sorts of stuff, grouch and brainstorm. I mean, we're just messed up people. You know, that guy in the book 1935, I forgot his name, Man Against Himself, says alcoholics are human beings who are out to destroy themselves. And so one of the things that I have as part of my consequences is I have an unquenchable desire to belong, to not be rejected, to be accepted, to be part of. You know, it says in the book, it says the fellowship, God will show us how to create the fellowship we crave. Did you know that if you're an alcoholic, you crave fellowship? You crave fellowship. Guys right now are down at the titty bar because they crave fellowship. They're going to go anywhere. They're playing poker. They're doing stuff. They're everywhere you're going to go because they crave. They got to have fellowship. And they ain't going to church because that's a bunch of bullshit. You know what I mean? Because they're in that agnostic. They're at the place we are before we come in here. You know, before we're forced by humility to come, by to humble ourselves to come in here. They're out there saying, "Well, forget that God thing." So you know that scratches off church. That scratches off anything spiritual. So that leaves what? You know, baseball games, football games, and the titty bars for us, basically. Or at home alone with a bottle. That's pretty much what guys are involved in. I don't know what girls are involved in. I don't know that deal. So one of the things we crave is we crave, you know, people liking us. We want people to like us. So the bottom line is if we get the feeling that you shouldn't talk about God, outside, inside, wherever it is, that there's something wrong with that, that people are going to laugh at us, God forbid, because our egos are so fragile, God forbid somebody shouldn't like me, God forbid I should say something, somebody's pissed off at me, you know what I mean? If we get that feeling or that whatever it is by people around us, that's not really, that's sort of looked down on in AA, then what will happen is we'll do whatever we can to make sure we don't do that deal. So we'll fit in, people won't laugh at us behind our back or talk about us behind our back. So what happens is the pure AA that comes from this book, which is all about God, all about the relationship, all about that's the deal, when filtered through the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, ultimately goes into the lap of a newcomer that you're not supposed to talk a lot about God. That's the message he gets. And so you get the watered down chemotherapy coming out. So that being said, I want to tell you about Bannock, Montana. There's a some of you have heard this before, you just bear up under it. If you understand a little bit about Bannock, Montana, you'll understand a little bit about staying sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. In 1862, one of the largest gold and silver strikes was found in Bannock, Montana, at a place called Grasshopper Creek. Now, this happens to be all about AA, by the way. And the second step and every step doesn't even matter. And this is legitimate stuff. You can go look it up on the internet. Bannock, B-A-N-N-A-C-K, Montana. All about a guy named Henry Edgar and Bill Fairweather. But anyway, in 1862, there was another guy, not those guys, that found this gold strike. And it wasn't as large as the gold strike at Sutter's Mill. As a matter of fact, it was a little bit after that, but it was pretty damn large. But by 1860, and so a large mining community, you know, they got real big. I think over 3 months, they got like 10,000 people or something like that. And then, but finally, by 1863, by the spring of 1863, the gold had sort of panned out. So you had all these miners there that were looking for gold and stuff. And what happened was, a whole bunch of them went out into, really, quite frankly, the Black Hills, which was Indian territory. But it didn't matter, you know, if they thought gold was there, they were going there. And there was a group of six guys, five white guys and a half-breed, you know, who went out. I'm not making this stuff up. That's the deal. I'm just telling you, that's the facts, you know. Went out there and went out to the Black Hills in order to search for gold. They were, like, behind the other guys. And they didn't find anything. They ran out of supplies. So when they were going back to Bannock, they camped at a spot called Alden's Alder Gulch. Remember that. That's important. I didn't stay sober for 27 years just on, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous. You got to read, remember stuff like Alder's Gulch or something. You know, you laugh. One day, 15 years from now, some guy's going to pick up a drink, and all of a sudden he's going to think about this meeting in Alder's Gulch, and he's going to say, it's going to hit a chord, and he's going to push that drink away, and he's going to stay sober. You know? I believe crap like that happens. I mean, it's crazy, because we're nuts, you know what I mean? There's no telling what keeps an alcoholic sober. You know, there's no telling. But I have people come up to me, and they say, I'll never forget when you said, and they say something, and I don't remember saying it. I don't know what they're talking about, you know. And people just remember strange things. So you camp by this place called Laurel's Gulch, and these guys go out, except for the half-breed who stayed back. Oh, I didn't tell you, they got captured by the Crow. They escaped, except for the half-breed who stayed behind. And so there were only five of them. And so in any event, they all go out looking for stuff, except for Bill Fairweather and Henry Edgar. And they see some rim rock in the gulch, and they go to the rim rock. I have no idea what rim rock is. I mean, so if you're saying, what is rim rock? I want you to know, I don't know what rim rock is, but I'm assuming it's some form of rock. It's not important for the story that you actually know what Rimrock is. It's rock. They see some rock. I know if you go to the internet and you look this thing up, they're gonna talk to you about Rimrock. You know? So they see some Rimrock, because the devil's always in the details, and they go up and they hit this Rimrock, and all of a sudden they find $12 worth of gold. Like lying there on the ground. Which doesn't seem like much, but back in like 1863, $12 was like $200. So how would you like to like hit a piece of rock and all of a sudden somebody gives you $200? You'd be out there hitting rocks. Which is what they did for the next 4 days. And they collected a lot of money. Because the guys came back and they hit their... But then what they had to do is they had to go back to Bannock. They had to go back to Bannock and they had to file a claim. And they had to basically get supplies and everything like that. But here's the problem. You got like 10,000 starving like miners looking for the money. They knew they had hit the mother lode. They knew they had hit something big. Indeed, they did, because from 1862 to 1900, they took out over $100 million worth of gold from Alder's Creek. Alder's Gulch, or something named after Alder. So in any event, so what happened was they had to make a pact, because you see, guys were just looking to jump claims, so they made this pact. They would go back there. You know, I mean, just imagine if you had just, we're all out there trying to make a living, trying to make a few bucks. We know money isn't everything, but it's like, it's right, I put it like right under oxygen. Like immediately, it's like oxygen money, you know, right under oxygen. So, sure, you're laughing, you don't know what it's like, but, So, yeah, nobody talks about money in AA. Money and relationships, right? No human power could have relieved our alcoholism, you know? What are they saying, working with others, you know? The no alcoholics say, you know, no wife, you know, if he loses, gets his wife back or cousin or anything, like job or no job or life or no thing, you know? And that's all we talk about in AA. That's all we talk about in AA. Money, job, wife. You know, sexual relationships, romantic. That's all we talk about in AA. Then some guy raises his hand and says, "Could I talk about God?" He says, "We don't talk about that crap around here." Go to one of Russell's meetings, you know? Weird guy. Should turn us on to Christians or something. So in any event, Bannock, Montana, right? So they go. So here's the. So imagine if we went out, like five of us went out, and we discovered a deal where all of a sudden we knew we were going to have hundreds of millions of dollars for the rest of our life, and we were set. But in order to make it happen, we had to travel up to Tallahassee. We had the lottery ticket, $100 million. Me and five of you guys. You know what Santos Traficante says? The only way. You know? Does anybody even know who Santos Traficante was?
No.
He was the mafioso who had most of Florida, and he was in Cuba. And Santos Traficante's famous quote was, his quote was this: "The only way to keep a secret between three people is if two of them are dead." Santos lived very long, and he was a very smart man. Had a lot of secrets nobody knows about. So there's me and five of you guys, and we're traveling out to Tallahassee, and we're assuming that five of you are still alive at this point. And here's the only deal. We're taking the train up to Tallahassee. And the only deal is, here's the deal. We can't tell anybody. We know we're about to just cash in, and each one of you guys is going to get $20 million. You understand? You can get $20 million. But here's the deal. It's going to be like a three-day train trip, and nobody can tell anybody anything. You know? So that's what they're doing. They're going to Bannock, Montana, you know? Nobody's supposed to tell anything. And so they gather up their stuff, and as night starts setting, they start walking towards the old oak tree, because they were all going to meet there. And as they're walking towards the tree with the supplies and their mules, you know, they look behind them. There's 300 miners. This is a true story. Following them. And so they get that sinking feeling that somebody talked. So, the head guy, whether it was Henry, you know, Bill Fairweather, whatever, went up to the head of the 300 miners, and he said, "Who talked?" And the guy said, "Nobody talked." He said, "Nobody talked." He says, "Well, how do you know?" And this is what he said. He says, "We could see it in your eyes." We could see it in your eyes. We knew you had hit the mother lode. These guys were so excited. They were so happy. They couldn't contain, even if they didn't say a word, they couldn't contain the incredible stuff that was going on. And the reason I'm sober today is because I've been hanging around that old oak tree, hanging around them miners for 27 years. I've been hanging around the miners. You know what? In Alcoholics Anonymous number 3 says, it says the exact. I won't put it as well. This is what he says. This is how he felt when he was 2 weeks sober. I don't want to miss his words. He was 3 weeks sober. This is Bill Dotson. Right out of treatment. Literally right out of treatment. And this is what he says. He says, Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. It would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that the others... He's talking about Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob, because he was Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. You get it? There was no 101 room. When he says the others, he's talking about all 2 of them. You see, they didn't have one guy doing real well and 15 guys sort of so-so. They had 2 guys on fire for God. Fired up. I noticed that the other two guys. Do they have in here the picture of the guy in the bed? The 2 guys talking to the guy in the bed? That's a picture, a portrait of Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob talking to Bill Dotson. He's the guy in the bed. When you see those 2 guys with a book, by the way, the book was not the big book, it was the Bible. When you see 2 guys, one guy holding a Bible, talking to another guy on the bed, and there was no one-on-one club, and there was only 2 guys who were alcoholics, and Bill was sober for whatever it was, 6 months, and they were trying to carry this message, and they're sitting there going around to hospitals, and there's no H&I, and there's no one-on-one club, and they're on fire trying to save themselves, and they're talking to him, and he says, and this guy, the 3rd guy, says, I noticed that the others, he's talking about Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob, seem to have such a release, such a happiness, something that I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. And it wasn't about being sober, because he was sober when he wrote this. I knew there was even more than being sober. Can you imagine that? More than being sober. Something that I hadn't got. And I remember one day, a week or 2 after I'd come out of hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch and I was listening and trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. He's looking for the mother lode. He's looking for the answer. He's hanging around the miners. He's looking at their faces. He's saying, how do I get this deal? Bill looked across at my wife and said to her, Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep talking about it and telling people. He felt so strongly about what he heard that night. He goes on to say, that sentence, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of that terrible disease, that I just want to keep telling people about it, has sort of been a golden text for the AA program and for me. And we read before every meeting, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And people think they're following our path, and most people that come in here aren't even interested in it. They're interested in their girlfriend, their boyfriend, their money, their bank account, but the last thing they're interested in is what these guys were doing every single day. And they expect to get this thing and get the freedom with half-assed efforts, telling people that God isn't important. And they expect to somehow get the payoff when they're not ready to surrender, because they're alcoholics and they're childish and they're babies. And they're going to get what babies get. They're not going to get what adults get. It's true. This disease and what happens to us when we come in here eventually does separate the men from the boys, without question. And you get what you get. So, I happen to be in this car today, doing this meeting, and I want to tell you something. I got to tell you, the meeting I was doing in the car was much better than this one. So just in case you don't like this one, I'm going to tell you, it's just, you missed it, you know? So I'm in the car. But you see, this is the way God works. You know, I was watching the way God works, you know. He's like all over the place. There's a great book that I like to read. It's the book of Romans. If you ever get around to it, you might want to look at it. God's all over the place. It's like that picture, that portrait I talked about, you know. Some people see it, some people don't. It's like spiritually, it has nothing to do with brains. Has absolutely nothing to do with brains. That's the amazing thing. All my life, I thought brains would do it. I am smart. I've got diplomas. I got stuff. I went to school. You know, a lot of smart people around. They're killing themselves. They're throwing. There's a lot of smart, rich people around. There's Britney Spears. There's people all over the place. They're just throwing drugs down their throat to die because they can't stand living. It has nothing to do with smarts. It has to do with something else. I know what it has to do with. It's all throughout this book. Smarts will sometimes keep you away. The one thing that will keep you in everlasting ignorance is contempt. Contempt. You know? You got a lot of people here will laugh at the God thing, will mock the God thing, will hold it in contempt. They're holding this whole book into contempt. They're holding this whole program in contempt. So I'm in my car today, and I'm in. What happened was I was supposed to go to a seminar on DUIs, and it was a great seminar, and I learned a lot, and I can't explain everything I learned, but let me tell you one thing I think I can share with you. It's probably a good idea for you not to drink. Now, let me tell you something. This seminar cost me like I've been practicing law for 32 years. The seminar cost me like, you know, $400. You understand what I'm saying? I just saved you guys a lot of money. I mean, the bottom line is, don't drink. You won't even have to worry about this shit. You know what I mean? Not drinking is really a good way to go. I mean, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings here. But you know what I mean, Alan? I don't want to hurt your feelings, but if you're in your room, you probably shouldn't drink, you know. Cut that stuff out. So, in any event, so I'm in my car. This is a true story. That's the great thing about the steps. They come right out. They're like, I was talking to a friend of mine that I work with today, a guy named Woody, who's a pastor, good guy. And we were talking about theology. It's a fancy word. I don't even know what it means, but it's has something to do with God, you know, reading the Bible and all. I said, you can study the books. I have a line in my email. If any of you got my emails, it says, what does it say? It says, conversation with a wise man across the table is better than 10 years of mere study with books. I mean, you have a lot of guys that study books and study the Bible and study a lot of stuff. I mean, you give me one guy who's met God for one nanosecond. You know, he knows a little, it's just something about being lifted up. I'll tell you, just change it just like that. So I'm in a car, and I'm driving, and you guys don't know about maybe the same thing in North Dade, but in South Dade, I'm talking bumper to bumper, unbelievable traffic. Unbelievable traffic. And so I get to a spot, and I'm stopped. There's no place I can go, and some guy's like leaning on the horn. That ever happen to you? Leaning, not like beep, but leaning on the horn. He's the big van behind me. And I see what's going on. What's going on, I get the deal, is he wants to make a right turn. And if I move like an extra 6 inches, he'll be able to make the right turn. Now, he's going to be able to make the right turn in 30 seconds anyway, you know what I mean? Because in 30 seconds, something's going to move and he's going to be able to make the right turn. But he can't stand, I understand what's going on, he can't stand the fact that he's 6 inches away from freedom. And he's taking the fact that I'm there personal, you know what I mean? And he's like leaning on the horn. Now, I've got to tell you something. There was like a thought, you know, and about putting my car in reverse. Well, you're laughing because you don't know what it's like, but about doing a little reverse thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But actually, I was weller than that. I was pretty spiritual because, first of all, he had interrupted your meeting. You know, I was like right in the middle of your meeting. And what happened was there was a thought about, it wasn't even about putting myself in reverse. You know what the thought was? The thought was, there was a time that I would put my car in reverse. That was really the thought. Like the day before. But not then. So what I did was I you know what I did? Even though he deserved to be shot, you know what I mean? For messing with, you know, the master of the universe, you know. What I did was I pulled up 6 inches and allowed him to go, and at when I pulled up 6 inches, the gal that was coming out the other end, she leaned on her horn because I was blocking her. And so then I stopped right there and let her go, and I now you know, my tendency to say, you know, that guy leaning on his horn like that. You know, my tendency is to think, what an asshole. What a total and complete asshole. What a, you know, and then, of course, next thought is, guy's an alcoholic. You know, I can diagnose alcoholism immediately, and you lean on the horn, that's enough for me, you're in treatment. You know? I know you're a drinker. Impossible for anybody to act like that without being an alkie, you know what I mean? Alkie or a dope fiend or something, you know? You know, I know he's an alkie, and I'm at, but you know, here's the interesting thing. I'm absolutely sure he's an asshole, but here's the truth. The truth is, I don't know this guy at all. Here's the absolute truth of the matter. The truth of the matter is this guy, who is leaning on his horn, might be the nicest, sweetest guy in the world. He might be. Really, you might meet him and then say, this is the guy, I can't believe he did that. He's the nicest guy in the world. Because the truth is I've done that. I mean, I'm not the nicest guy, sweetest guy, but I've done that. And here I am sitting in my car, and I'm the guy who could be leaning on the horn, and I'm sitting there going, thank you, Lord, you know, God bless you, buddy. Go ahead and go your way. So somebody might look at me and say, well, he's just the sweetest guy in the world. You know what I mean? But the truth is, most of my life, I was the guy leaning on the horn. Now, you know, that's what's going on. Now, that just happened. That's like a 3-minute deal out of my life. 3-minute deal. But here's the deal. The truth is if you just take a videotape of that deal, him leaning on the horn, and me not letting it bother me and moving up and saying, go ahead, buddy. If you take it, that basically is a snapshot of my entire life from birth to death. It really is. My whole life is about either leaning on the horn, pushing, shoving, yelling, conniving, lying, doing whatever I can to get in my way because I'm scared, I'm pissed, I'm angry, I want something, I'm not getting something, I need something, leaning on the horn, hurting people, pushing people out of the way, not giving a rip about anything, leaning people, doing that, that my whole life, from birth to death, is that guy, in that second. That didn't happen just, that's my entire life. Or, sitting in the car saying, God bless you, guy. And here's the deal. That's everybody's life. That's everybody's life. And the only difference is, here's the deal. The only difference with me is, prior to coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, prior to being humbled, my life was 100% the horn. I mean, it may not even look like the horn. It may have looked at one point. You might have run into me, and I may have looked like nice or jovial. Or like a nice guy, but believe me, if I was being a nice guy, it was just my way of leaning on the horn that time to get where I wanted to go. You just see what would have happened if you would have crossed me, or come within 6 inches of my space, you know what I mean? Or done something, you would have noticed a different critter. My whole life prior to coming to AA, with or without the booze, was the horn thing. I was the guy leaning on the horn. I need that job, I need that gal, I need that money, I need that deal. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and because of faith, unfortunately I don't have time to explain this, but I'll explain next week because we'll be on step 3 and I'll talk a little bit about this. because I'll explain how this worked, because there's a way this, because of faith, because of living a life of faith. I started to be the guy in the car saying, God bless you, buddy, and letting him go. You know, I don't think there's anybody on the planet Earth who's alive who doesn't have times when they're leaning. I don't think there's anybody perfect. I don't think, it's just like I said, it's probably true, probably the day before I would have backed up. I don't think there's anybody who lives a life always, God bless you, buddy, and always, you know, but the point is, there is a difference between living a life where you're always on the horn and living a life when you're only there a little bit, but most of the time, you're in the car saying, God bless you, buddy, go ahead. It's a big difference. And I can tell you what, when I was living the leaning on the horn deal, I was drinking a lot. I was drinking a lot. And if I wasn't drinking, I wasn't a happy camper. With or without money or anything else. Leaning on the horn is a rough way to go. And I'll tell you something, without faith in God, without ultimately developing this thing, which I did, through a lot of things that happened to me, including following them up, because the people I followed who were the minors, who I said, the guys that I saw in AA, like these guys saw, that had that release, that weren't leaning on the horn, that had that love, that had that steadiness, that had that gleam in their eye, had something more than sobriety. The thing that Bill Dotson saw in Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson, that thing was their faith in God. These were men of faith, and he followed them around because he wanted what they had. You know, it wasn't even, do you want to believe in God or not believe in God? It was, do you want what I have? Well, you don't want what I have. You know, he saw something. He saw the mother load. He was willing to follow him to the oak tree. He was willing to follow him to Alder's Gulch. You know, and because I was willing to follow them, I noticed things started changing in my life. Now, my faith, whatever faith I have now, which, you know, sometimes isn't 100%, has grown. You know, this is a thing that's grown tremendously in 27 years. I can guarantee you, I've been doing meetings for a long time. I didn't talk like this when I had 2 years. I didn't talk like this when I had 5 years. And, you know, if I did, they would have stoned me. No, don't kid yourself. I absolutely know that I get away with a lot of shit in AA because I got 27 years. But, you know, because I have 27 years, that gives me an obligation. It gives me an obligation to do two things. Tell you the absolute truth about where I am today without covering it up, okay? And I have a responsibility to share this stuff with you. There's plenty of guys with 5 years that won't say this stuff to you. Because it says in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, to finish this thing off, it says, there is a solution. Further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recovered. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual in their personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. That's what this book is all about. That's what our stories are all about. That's what we're supposed to be talking about in here. That's, you know, the truth is, people are interested in that stuff. They're interested in stories of great weight, and they don't want to hear how you got your boyfriend back, how you got your girlfriend back, what's going on in your sex life, how you lost the job, how you didn't get the law. They don't want to hear that crap. You know, you tell that shit to your sponsor so he can beat you up or something. You know what I mean? They don't want to hear that. They want to know about the victory. They want to know about the solution. They all know. Everybody in here knows about the problem. We don't want to hear the problem. You know where they want to hear the problem? Down at the Swanko bar. They sit around, they drink, and they talk to each other about their problems. They don't want to know about the, we don't want to know about the problem. We want to know about the solution. We're interested in the guy that has the solution in here. And this is the solution. Everything they're talking about in this book. Everything Bill Wilson talked about the solution to Bill Dotson. He heard it. He said, I think I've got the answer. You hear the solution every single day of your lives, and that you choose to either ignore it or buy into it or say, that can't possibly be the solution. Or saying, that can't be it. Because if that's it, then you might have to change your way of thinking. If that's the solution, you might have to give up stuff. You might have to change. That can't be the solution. Well, yeah, that's your solution. Oh, that's, but this is a do-it-your-own-thing program, and that's not my solution. My solution, because we're all different, you know, and it's a whole different thing. It's just like your program and my program, because that way we can keep fuzzy and ambiguous and never and vague and never really have to do the work. And sort of make believe we're growing because, you know, I haven't had a drink. While if we have our brain in our head, noticing that there's a difference, there's a separation going on. So next week we'll talk about step 3. Thank you. Make it interesting.